This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to episode 43A of the Strong Style Story Podcast. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, and you are listening to this through Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. Listen to it now on your favorite podcatching apps. With me today, the one, the only, LOB underscore three, Lawrence O'Brien. Lawrence, what's up, brother?
Hey, oh man, a lot of things going on since yesterday.
just since yesterday. Yeah. We're once again doing our yearly split into two episodes because we've hit that really busy period, the oddly busy period in between Dominion and G1 Climax. Where the guys all go on foreign locales for shows, and this year there were a hell of a lot of them, and part B is going to be our G1 Climax preview because that's coming up here in the next week, so we got to get that going on. I guess we can start when last we all convened. We were heading into Kizuna Road. And, I mean, there was nothing really too critical that happened on these shows. Goto regained the Never Belt and then was challenged by Jeff Cobb. And then Hiromu Takahashi, of course, beat El Desperado in the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match, finally beating him. Super Strong Machine, my bad, retired, and that was a fun little affair. I mean, even with Shogun K.Y. Wakamatsu making a return appearance on these shows to manage all the strong machines. And then Tamaki Hanma returned, and that match actually made NJPW World. Did you get a chance to see either of the Jinji Hirata retirements or the Hanma return?
I actually didn't.
Okay, fair enough. One thing that really struck me at Hirata's retirement was the fact that, you know, he acknowledged right at the very end. I mean, he went and talked about his career, and then at the very end, he said like a little, you know, prayer or remembrance for his wife who passed away from cancer back in January.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, wow. oh my goodness. So that kind of kind of put a somber tinge on that affair. But then, also, Tamaki Honma had someone with him who it turns out is his wife now.
Oh.
And, oh, yeah, I guess they married last year and nobody knew about it until, like, right before, you know, like, in the days leading up to his return match.
Well, that's fascinating.
It really kind of is. And, you know, again, it doesn't excuse the fact that there's still, you know, accusations hanging over Honma from Kyoko Ichiki, but at least I guess we can safely say at least they're not around each other anymore, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, for the best for everybody involved. But, Yeah, so that was a thing that happened. Of course, Hanma's, you know, hasn't been seen since, but you know he made his return match. So later that week, you know, going on that same weekend was also Minoru Suzuki's Great Pirate Festival, which I still have not seen footage from that. Have you?
I saw the pictures of him and Okada in the rain.
Yeah, I mean the pictures that were going around were absolutely fucking epic, and that alone sells me on this whole affair, that this whole affair was worth it. where it was, you know, these images of Suzuki and Okada wrestling to a 30-minute draw in an absolute downpour outside, mind you, because it was built to be an outside event. And you know, it just, I really hope the footage of this, you know, the video footage of this becomes available really soon, because I really do want to see this. And just to put everything into perspective, at the very end of the festival on the second day, Suzuki and the wrestlers were going around basically ordering everybody that was in attendance to pick their trash up.
Sure.
which is a great companion piece to what I heard when Japan crashed out of the World Cup earlier this week. The entire Japanese squad cleaned up their locker room, made it spick and span, left a note in Russian, but also the Japanese fans that were in attendance at the stadium helped pick up the trash at the stadium too. So, you know, that's nice and all. So
yeah.
Yeah, can't complain too much about any of that. So then the week afterwards, there were the New Japan roster was split between three locations. One of which was the Ring of Honor Best in the World pay-per-view, which there weren't too many people there. I think it was just like Sonata, Evil, Bushi, and Kushida.
Yeah.
Were there, which, you know, it's not really I really don't want to get into that because I didn't even see any footage of it. But and then there was also the Daytona Beach show, which I already did a pod blast about. So I won't take too much time with this. But I Lawrence, I want to get your thoughts on this and that, and particularly one situation from that.
Oh boy. What a disaster. I mean, like, I didn't even watch the show because I had no interest in it, to be honest. Like, I just had, like, zero, like, want to even watch that show because it was, like, I don't know, to me, it was just, like, a nothing card for the most part and didn't really have much, like, of a, I don't know, like a standing on the actual New Japan product, I guess. So I was like, okay, whatever. It's like a, it's just a kind of a one-off show anyway. So I really don't care about it. But then it's like, it was brought to my attention, like when it was going on, that like fucking Chasen Rance was like booked for this show, and I'm just like, excuse me, like are you serious? Like at an event where there's like. Many children, like, around. You were gonna book Chasen Rance?
Yeah. Now, mind you, I'm just gonna remind everybody that, mind you, this was the participants, you know, Chasen Rance against Aaron Epic was not announced in the arena. They did not announce this. In fact, when it started, I didn't even realize that this was gonna happen. So then, my honey and I were wondering why Chase Owens shaved his head, and then we realized, oh, wait, this isn't Chase Owens.
No. Nope. No, it was not.
No. Yeah. So, yeah, so oh, then...
Man.
Yeah, my goodness. Now, I know throughout the day that Kenny Omega was taking some stick, and he was initially defending the decision, and then he came back seemingly legitimately contrite, but he had to be cajoled into it.
Yeah, it was like kind of like just very uncomfortable. It's a very uncomfortable situation, and like I was just like, dude, just like stop dying on your, like, falling on your sword here. Just like admit you like didn't do your proper, like, you know, research, and didn't, like, you just did something just to, you know, and didn't even, like, bother to, like, look into guys that you were, like, talking to. And I don't know.
And that's
like,
what I understand. I mean, it is literally the first hit on Google. When you look up, like, Chasen Rance, is literally the first hit on Google.
Like, the dude is a convicted sex offender. Like, it's
yeah,
not, like...
he is in the fucking sex offender registry.
Like, this is not, like, something you have to, like, dig up information for. Like, it is widely known fact. Like, it's out there. It was not, like, hearsay or anything. This man was convicted of...
Yeah, he was convicted because he uses his real fucking name.
Like,
I mean, this is his,
like,
actual name.
Oh man, it just makes me more, even more uncomfortable. That it's just because it's like at an event where there's so many, like, probably so many younger kids there.
Oh my
and
goodness,
like,
yeah, lest we forget, CEO is a video game convention.
Yeah, it's
you,
like,
and yes, I know that everything is, you know, centers around, you know, people my age now, but if you don't think that there are kids, you know, underage kids at a video game convention.
Oh, you got another thing coming.
Yeah, brother. Because I actually went to the CEO part. Now, I'm going to get into something a little bit here, too, regarding that. But I just want to say that, yeah, I mean, it's nice that Omega offered the refund. It really fucking wasn't the point.
Right.
I did not feel offended to the... I mean, I was not offended to the point, but I mean... Why is it so fucking hard for people, for grown adults in this business,
yeah,
to admit when you were wrong?
Yeah, just accept
Why?
Responsibility. It's like, it's not like a difficult thing to do. Like,
I, not to beat my own drum here, Lawrence. How many times have I admitted when I fucked up?
Yeah, right.
On,
like,
this show.
Like,
on this
right,
show.
Right, and it's like it. We just, I think, just sometimes that's just a lost, like. Like art, I think, and at times now, it's like nobody wants to be like the fall guy, and nobody wants to, you know, take the, you know, the blame, I guess. And it's just like, no, I mean, but it's like, you dude, like, you didn't do your proper research. That's all you had to say, is like, I didn't look into this nearly like what as much as I should have, and was completely out of my element.
Yeah, I mean,
Omega was
not done diligence here.
And obviously, Kenny Omega was very much out of his element here, as he did not do the proper, you know, go through the proper windfalls and everything.
Vetting. Yeah, he didn't vet this.
No,
and admittedly, it may have been, you know, that CEO Jabali, whoever, you know, the guy from CEO. Seriously don't know his name. But I mean, the fact is, yeah, I mean, this was easily findable. You're letting someone who was convicted of sexual battery on a minor, dragging over state lines, I might add, which is, you know, makes it federal as far as I'm concerned, but somehow that didn't, you know, that falls under state in this case. I mean, yeah, know who, especially when there's actual children running around,
right?
Know who the fuck you're dealing with, my God. I mean,
right.
You know, Tom Green, not the comedian, the guy here in Lafayette, Indiana,
who
runs the Dynamite Cup, got so much shit for posting a code of conduct. It's like, this is the Dynamite Cup was a charity show for a children's charity.
Right.
And there are children, actual children, going to be around there. Yes, I think we do need a code of conduct, because as especially since Gamergate, one thing that has been proven is that grown-ass men don't seem to know how to fucking act in public.
That is for sure. Holy cow. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, there's just this morality, like, this complete lack of morality, like, that it's, like, kind of, like, seen to be, like, cool at times in that community. And it's like, you know what, guys, like, stop trying to be edgy assholes and just... Remember that it's not always just for you. Like,
yeah, seriously. Like, I mean, everything in culture revolves around, like, one demographic. And
right.
Yes, I'm in that demographic, and that pisses me off that I'm in that demographic. I mean,
I know. And it's
like
just,
with everything, Star Wars, comic books, video games, pro wrestling, you know, just whatever. It's like, cartoons are not even for kids anymore. Cartoons.
I know. It's wild. It's everybody has to, like.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But
I know.
All this being said, you're right that the matches were not consequential. I had a great. I still had, and despite the two dark matches, which I really don't want to get into those again.
Yeah, but no.
It was a fun time. I didn't feel personally attacked or offended or anything like that. But God damn it, you know, for God's sake.
Yeah, like we got to do better, man. We got to do better.
For God's sake, you know. Okay, you know what, Tyson Smith. You need to not fuck up, okay? Just or admit when you do. Kenny Omega, the character, right. Fine. That's one thing. Tyson Smith, take this one on the chin. Know that you fucked up. Learn from it, for God's sake. You know.
Yep. That's all. Like that's literally it.
That's literally it. We're trying to cut you. We're trying to cut you a break here. Just
yeah, like
know
just,
that
that's,
know when
just
you
pay
fucked
attention.
Up. Yeah. Pay attention, know when you fucked up. Now, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention about the CEO show is that, the Confederate flag-waving contingent of wrestling Twitter was getting on New Japan saying, oh, and this is how they hope to compete with WWE because of the delays in starting, which I admit is not a good look on New Japan. However, again, number one, this is not an official New Japan show. It had the Lion Mark branding, but this was not listed on the events page for New Japan. So as far as New Japan is concerned, this wasn't an actual show. It was just like a co-produced show, right? But
yeah.
As far as the delays are concerned, on the Sunday, my honey and I actually went to CEO because we wanted to see stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
And according to the schedule, by the time we arrived at 5:15 p.m., they were supposed to be starting Dragon Ball FighterZ, and then Street Fighter V was supposed to happen at 8, which we wanted to see the Street Fighter, like at least some of it, you know, be there for some of the Street Fighter. When we got there, apparently Super Smash Bros. Ran long, which put Tekken 7 running long, so my honey and I actually got to see the Tekken 7 grand finale, which was actually really cool to see that. I have to admit, that was fun to watch and they still had the rickety ass ring there because that's where the players would go to play. So the guy who won the Tekken tournament, he was using the ring as a prop. I mean, he was like climbing the ropes and, you know, did a Ultimate Warrior rope shake when he won. That was apparently this kid's first ever title win since he became a Tekken tournament guy.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
But long story short, so Tekken 7 was delayed, so then Dragon Ball FighterZ didn't even start until like 6:15.
Oh, I see.
And so then that went for hours. We ended up leaving. We ended up going to walk on the beach for a little bit. We came back. We were hoping, okay, maybe Dragon Ball was going to go. Yeah, no, Dragon Ball did not end until like 10 or so, which means Street Fighter V did not even start until 10:30, 11 o'clock. Street Fighter did not end until 2 a.m. So I am the very long story short of this is I'm putting the delays firmly on CEO and not New Japan.
Yeah.
I'm putting this firmly on CEO because, I mean, to be delayed like to the point of 3 hours is ridiculous.
Oh my God.
You know, on, and this was your bread and butter event. Yeah, the wrestling show was just kind of a little extra for the first day of the tournaments, but for your bread and butter event to go 3 hours over, yeah, good God, y'all, you know.
Oof.
So again, the delays did not look good for New Japan, but I'm putting the blame firmly on CEO for that one.
Yeah, they just
after what I experienced on Sunday.
They didn't structure that whole thing very well.
Yeah. And that's probably the last time we're going to talk about video game. Well, actually, no, that's not true because they just released the King of Sports mobile game is now fully live. So on both Apple Store and Google Play. So there you go. So during that same weekend, we had the Strong Style Evolved UK shows in obviously the UK in Milton Keynes in Manchester. They are up on NJPW World. I have not had a chance to see them as yet. I am gonna make a few couple points though. Number one, Suzuki going absolutely fucking dominated on these shows. And Minoru Suzuki now holds two titles, and they're both in RevPro.
Yep.
So, but I've heard nothing but good things about these shows.
Yeah, I'm probably going to watch them pretty soon, actually.
Yeah. The other thing, I really just want to see Walter destroy both Yuji Nagata and Yujiro Takahashi. I think that those will be good fun to watch. But can we talk about the great Okan for a second? Were you aware of this, Lawrence?
The
great Okan.
Oka's like
Tomoyuki Oka is been repackaged as the great Okan, and apparently apparently he's staying in the UK. So he's on excursion.
Oh, so they're just leaving him there. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hope it works because we've all been saying that we thought that his development was just not where it should have been.
No.
And really, especially in relation to like Kitamura and Shota Umino, and really Tetsuhiro Yagi too, but he's injured. He's still out injured.
Yeah.
But and that's not the only injury we're talking about today. So Great Okan, yeah, if you didn't see this, he's basically doing like it's almost like a Mongolian warlord gimmick. I've heard tell he looks like, I guess, Kinkorn Karn from the old NES pro wrestling game.
Oh my god.
Or I've also heard, I think it's Android 21, I can't remember which number it was, but Android 21 from Dragon Ball Z is the other one I've heard him be.
Oh my god.
As. Yeah, do you know which one I'm talking about? Like kind of the chubbier one that had like the weird the hat on.
Oh.
Yeah, if we're taking Lawrence down some roads here today.
Oh my god.
But I'm kind of looking forward to seeing just how, I mean, it's good enough that pro wrestling can still be ridiculous in the good way sometimes.
Yes.
You know, especially since this is on the same weekend as, you know, Michael Nakazawa. But, yeah.
Mm.
Which that was... I'm still going to say, yeah, I'm over a week removed from it. That still was no good. I'm just going to flat out say that was no good.
Mm.
Anyway, check those out. Those are on NGPW World. Haven't had a chance to watch them yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about them. So as we're heading into last night's Strong Style Evolve show, a few other things went on. First off, on Thursday they announced the first actual match for All In. Besides the provisional, you know, Nick Aldis versus Cody Rhodes NWA World's Heavyweight Title match. They announced now. I just want you to know that, just to set this up, they had on the table, they could have done Kazuchika Okada versus Penta. They could have done Kazuchika Okada versus Joey Janela. Which, that would have been fun in a train wreck sort of way, I think. I mean, just, you know, it's just one of those wild things that would never happen anywhere else. No, they went for Kazuchika Okada versus Marty Scurll. And the reaction has either been like, this is the greatest thing ever, or this is complete dog shit, what are you doing? And I find myself firmly on the this is complete dog shit, what are you doing side.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm just not. I don't care about this show. I don't care.
Any interest I had in this show is lost because
Marty Scurll versus Okada is the match you book.
Yeah, again, you had Okada versus one of the top five wrestlers in the world who just had a fucking blistering Arena Mexico debut on Friday in Penta El Cerro Miedo.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you go with. Okay.
But Jeff, get it? It's the Rainmaker against the guy with the umbrella. Ha 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 ha. It's hilarious.
Oh, Jesus. You know, I didn't even think about that. That's how what the fuck this match is. I mean, this
These
is
motherfuckers
like a, this is like this,
this
is a fucking
match.
War of the Worlds Buffalo mid-card match, you know?
Yeah, essentially that is what this is. Yes. That is exactly what this is.
And once again, I am so glad I decided not to go back to my home stomping grounds for Labor Day. Because I really did not want to spend Labor Day in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, and let's just say I got some memories of that place. Let's just say that. But holy Jesus Christ! What? I know this show sold out in 33 minutes. Can you not book the show like you sold out in 33 minutes?
Yeah, I'm sure this match will be great for the people who think Marty Scurll is actually good. I mean, but I don't know.
You know, maybe Okada can get a decent match out of him. I don't know.
Marty
Scurll has
just
gotten so fucking lazy in the last year and a half.
It's gonna be your average run of the mill match. It's nothing. It's gonna be nothing special. It's gonna be okay, and it's gonna be just whatever. And then I don't know what the hell they're doing with everybody else.
Judging by the comments last night, we're probably gonna get the Young Bucks against Penta and Phoenix, which, you know, that match has already happened five times in PWG.
Yeah, right. And it's like, you know, they could have had some first time matchups, and they just want to stick to their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Skrull and Okada is, but it's like not really a very like exciting one.
Like, who the hell? I mean, was anyone clamoring for this? Oops. It's my laundry stopping. Was anyone clamoring for this match? I mean,
I don't think there was anybody that was like, oh, I really can't wait to see Skrull against Okada.
Yeah,
like,
and again, I'm glad that there are people who are really looking forward to this because they're getting what they paid for. I know that there are a lot of people who don't feel that they're getting what they paid for, you know, that are going, so, I mean,
we'll see. Like, that's a crappy feeling.
It kind of is. But again,
I think they're just kind of coasting now after.
And I know Chris is going to go, and I know Chris has said he's going to go there. So, but yeah. So, but in addition, some other things happened leading into last night, which include three more U.S. shows are going to happen for New Japan.
Yeah, now this was interesting. I mean, Jeff and I are still a little bit like puzzled at what Lion's Break means.
Yeah, okay. So on September the 30th, they're going back. It looks like they're as of last night. They said they're going to the Walter Pyramid again, as opposed to the Convention Center, which means sadly that means that the taco truck will not get a bump from this. Unfortunately,
No, they will not.
Look, somebody's got to look out for the taco truck.
That's sad.
And it may as well be us.
Sad.
But on September the 30th, they're going back to Long Beach for Fighting Spirit Unleashed, which comes right after Destruction. I definitely will not be going to that one because I'm actually going to be back from the UK that week. So yeah, I'm not about to hop on another plane, so you know.
No way, but this Lion's Break business really is interesting to me.
Okay.
It's on my birthday and the day after my birthday.
Yeah, and it's Lion's Break Project One, which happens in Anaheim. So they're hitting another LA, I guess, adjacent or suburb. I don't know how you want to consider Anaheim. I mean, it's. Not it's a city in its own right, but it's not LA, you know. So
yeah,
I don't know if it counts. Right, I don't know
Angels
if it,
territory.
Yeah, I don't know if it counts as I don't know if it really counts as a suburb, or I don't know how it's considered out there, because I don't know, you know, L.A. city politics. But basically, it's in between Power Struggle and the World Tag League on November the 10th and 11th in Anaheim. Lions Break Project 1, which I really don't know what that means.
So, I mean, my assumption is that it's going to be like some of the dojo guys from the U.S., I would think, and then probably some of the young dojo guys and over in Japan, and then maybe some mixed, like some other indie guys mixed in or whatever, kind of like they do with the Lionsgate shows in Japan. That's my assumption, at least.
That would be great, but why make that a 2-day event, though?
Yeah, I know. It's like really odd that like there'd be like two shows, but I don't know. Maybe they got some big names planned for that. I don't know. That's really interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, like I said, it is definitely me that they're. I mean, Harold May and Takaki Kidani and Bushiroad and New Japan are they're going hard in the paint here.
Yeah, they are. Clearly, you can see that there's some stuff being cooked up here. Like already, it's they're going aggressive.
Yeah, and I see the criticism. They wish that they would go somewhere other than California, which, you know, I'm sure there are reasons why they're doing this in California. I mean, I'm sure they will move beyond California at some point. But keep in mind, too, all the New Japan guys, they remember, Ring of Honor doesn't go out this far. I think the furthest west they go is Vegas.
Yeah, they don't run.
Yeah, they don't like run California. They don't run California. Like I said, the furthest west I think that Ring of Honor goes is Vegas, and you know they do co-productions, you know, with Ring of Honor on the East Coast and in the Midwest.
Yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, well, so we'll keep up on those. But then on Friday, a co-production between All Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Revolution, King of Indies.
Oh, yeah.
Which featured Ryusuke Taguchi. Who would go out in the... who would go out to the eventual winner of the event, Dragon Lee.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
But also, Titan, who hasn't been seen in New Japan in some time,
mm-hmm.
but he went on to Herb Gordon. And I don't care, because fuck Herb Gordon. He blocked me anyway, so whatever. And then Jeff Cobb, who was, you know, in attendance last night, he fell to Jacob Fatu.
Oh, yeah.
In the first round. So anyway, if you want to watch this event, it's on Fight TV. If you want to watch this, so apparently Taguchi got really over here, and he was pretty over in Daytona. It has to be said.
That's good.
him and Dragon Lee against Sho and Yo was probably the best match of that night. It has to be said.
Wow.
Even though, you know, I know people were in for the Golden Lovers, and of course, you know, the Ingobernables, but. Honestly, on a pure wrestling level, I think that, yeah, the Daytona show, Dragon Lee and Taguchi versus Sho and Yo was the best match of the night. So, all of this has been leading to last night's spectacle, G1 Special in San Francisco. Oh, boy. I did not expect to have so much material to talk about regarding this show alone.
Oh, man. Yeah, no kidding.
I was not expecting to have this much material.
Holy cow.
So I guess the best thing to do is start from the beginning, which is, first of all, yes, that feeling of dread that you had when you saw Jim Ross and Josh Barnett calling this show, it was imminently justified, but holy crap, did it pay off in some other way that nobody saw coming.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely nobody saw coming. And so we're going to get to this here in a few minutes. So, just to go down the results, the first match, a Bullet Club team of Chase Owens, Yujiro Takahashi, the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and King freaking Haku.
Blessed.
Beat a Chaos Blessed. Team of the combined Roppongi 3K, Yoshihashi, and Gedo. Tonga hitting Gedo with a gun stun. I mean, it was what it was. I mean, it was just, I wasn't expecting much, and I didn't get much, and it was okay, you know?
And Haku was there, so that, I mean, that was, you know.
Yeah, and Haku was there, so there's that, too. Second match, I really enjoyed this one, probably more than I should have. Tomohiro Ishii and Toriano continued the feud against Suzuki-gun, beating Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. with Yano doing the most Yano finish possible at following a lariat from Ishii. So I'm glad that Yano actually got something over Sabre. You know?
Yeah, it was a fun little match. I actually enjoyed this, and Yano was great. Yano was, like, fantastic during this. So
I know people are dreading Yano in G1 Climax, but, you know, I really actually appreciate his G1 Climax matches just because it's, you know... I mean,
they're nice and short too. Yeah, like I can't.
Well, yeah. I mean, back when G1 Climax was, eight guys in a 1-day tournament, I could see where comedy matches like this might get irritating. When you're going over, I mean, I should probably say this for Part B, but when you're going way over, like when you have, like literally, how many matches are we talking here? Like, just, you know, we're getting into, like, we're getting into, like, triple digit the amount of matches that you see in Climax. Yano's antics are kind of a welcome respite, you know?
Right.
In some ways. Going on, Adam Page and Marty Scurll beat Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida. This was just kind of whatever, you know?
Yeah, it was okay.
It was okay. The first title match of the evening, Hirooki Goto beating Jeff Cobb to retain the NEVER Openweight Championship. I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I thought it was fine. It was a fine match.
It was fine. Goto working heel in this match was amazing.
Yeah, it was a different look for him. It was definitely different, but I guess he kind of had to, because Cobb is, like, just so over, you know.
Yeah,
in the West. So it's
and that was kind of a good audible if that was the case. If and Goto is kind of like, oh, okay, all right, I'll do this.
Right.
But yeah, it was a fun little match. I had no problems with this match at all.
Cobb looked good. I think Cobb should have won. Honestly,
I kind of wondered for half a second if it was going to. I was wondering if the NEVER belt was just gonna kind of be a hot potato for a little bit.
But, yeah, I know. As crazy as I know that sounds, because I know it's been like a hot potato, but I don't know. Cobb winning there might have been an interesting title change, but that works though too.
It does. The fifth match was the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Titles. The Young Bucks retaining over Evil and Sonata.
They had another good match together.
It was good. I think I like the Dominion match more.
Oh, yeah, I thought the Dominion match was better, for sure. But no, this was a good match, too, I thought. I thought they did pretty well together once again. They have some pretty decent chemistry, so...
Yeah. And now the Killer Elite Squad are making noises on Twitter about facing the Young Bucks, so that'll be something if that happens. So then we had the intermission, where they confirmed the three U.S. shows. And then... when we came back, and at this point, it should be noted, the intermission bit was pre-taped.
Oh, that's right.
It was, yeah. Like, wow, okay. All right. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, a video package, you know, anyway, going through the various feuds that were coming up. But still, I mean, come on. I mean, you're going to pre-tape the intermission?
Mm.
Oh, well. So we came back, Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay beat Tetsuya Naito and Bushi. It was fun. It could have been a little more, but it was fun. And Okada with those fucking balloons. What the hell?
Oh, yeah. This is what I wanted to talk about. This Okada gimmick. Like, what is going on here? I guess he did this over in England too. From when I was,
I know he had the new pants. I didn't know he about the balloons though. He did the balloons.
Well, I guess like
too.
The song too is.
Yeah, they. Well,
the,
I think
the theme, the new.
Yeah, I think it was like both him and and Suzuki has a new version of Kaze ni Nare too. So.
Yeah, it's I'm not crazy about it. Like, to be honest with you, both of those remixes are like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, they are what they are, but I mean, we got used to, you know, Love and Energy after a while too. So remember, we were all.
You mean Go Ace?
Yeah, Go Ace. Yeah, exactly. So this was, I mean, so Ospreay pinned Bushi with Stormbreaker. This match was what it was. It was, you know, kind of a nothing tag match. Maybe to, you know, I know JR was trying to hype it up by saying, well, what if, you know, Okada and Naito meet in the G1 final, which, man, why are you going there?
why do you say that?
Yeah. Why do I say that?
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I know he was trying to do his job and build the match up, but it was kind of unnecessary because this was just, you know, kind of like a return tag, you know, return from intermission tag match before, you know, the three title matches. Which we're going to spend some time on all of these. The first title match after the intermission, IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, Hiromu Takahashi beating Dragon Lee with Time Bomb to retain.
Oh my
God. I mean, okay, let's go through all the emotions. First of all, I thought this was bar none the best match of the night. But the long-term effects of this match, as Lawrence and I woke up this morning, we both saw the reports that Hiromu Takahashi was passed out backstage and was taken to hospital, and it's suspected of being, it's a suspected broken neck. They don't know for sure yet, at least it hasn't been reported as we record this, but he passed out, and I can tell you the exact spot in which it happened too. It was Dragon Lee doing a Phoenix Plex on Hiromu, and Hiromu kind of skidded on his neck a few inches.
Oh, man. I almost got like sick just watching that spot when it happened. I was like, oh no, like that was really bad. Like, that was really bad. And I'm like, he's lucky he's not dead. And it's like, oh boy, like, now it's like, he's actually in the hospital, and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Jesus, like, great.
Let's not forget, okay, in fairness, Hiromu finished the match, but in fairness, so did Steve Austin when he had his neck.
Yeah, adrenaline is a hell of a thing, I'll tell you that much. It gives you that some of this energy that you just don't even realize you have sometimes when you hit, even when something like that happens to you.
Yeah.
And your body kind of pushes through, and then once you wind down, then that's when it's just like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, and that's when I'm guessing that's when he passed out, you know, because he seemed to walk away fine, but then I guess when he hit backstage, oh boy. And we saw that with Shibata too.
Right.
Shibata didn't even get backstage before he fell over. You know?
Right. Yeah, so it was
my God.
Not good.
And I just can't imagine how Dragon Lee might be feeling, because, I mean, this is a guy, this was their 16th, count them, 16th singles match against each other.
It's crazy.
Not to mention all the tag matches. And keep in mind, too, Dragon Lee had just wrestled, like, three matches the day before.
Yeah.
So this was like his fourth match in 24 hours.
And the stuff they were doing to each other, once again, was just, like, just insane.
It started, I mean, it went out the gate insanity.
Yeah, I mean, they ran through the greatest hits, and they were just, like, whew, but they were, like, They were just mauling each other.
And again, this was a great match. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to go back and watch it again, knowing what we know.
It's just like, oh, man.
I still never went back and rewatched Okada versus Shibata after what happened. I just can't, you know?
It's very, very tough to watch. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But
very hard to watch.
Obviously, we're all big in the tank for Hiromu and the Ingobernables on this show, but I mean, just on that level, I just really hope that he's going to be okay.
It was unfortunately, I knew it was going to be a matter of time before something like this happened to one of those guys.
My honey and I, even on the phone this morning, we were discussing this. We were like, yeah, like every time we see them wrestle, you know, or Hiromu, Russell's like, oh God, is this going to be the day?
Yep, you know? and unfortunately, this was the day. And it did finally happen. It was unfortunately like inevitable, just with that rate they work at and that just what they want to do to each other. They just don't really care. And then sometimes that is very, very dangerous mindset to have when you're doing that, because that's when the stuff like this can happen. You just kind of, you take it one step a little further than normal. And then that was not good. And, I really hope Hiromu can just, you know, properly function. That's all I care about.
I agree. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, he needs to be able to function, but, again,
Jesus,
we'll try to keep posted. Follow the blog, strongstylestory.tumblr.com.
I mean, if he can wrestle again, so be it. But, like, if not, I just hope he's all right. That's not good. That broken neck is never... you never know. You never know.
Right. And let's face it. I mean, we have had cases of people coming back from broken necks. I mean, Steve Austin. You know, what became the biggest wrestler on earth. Possibly in
Angle,
history.
Obviously, and
yeah, Angle,
Lita,
Yoshitatsu, Masahiro Chono, had a long and storied career, following a neck break. It's not to say that it's not a big deal. I mean, it is a huge deal. I mean, that could be fatal, but you know, it's possible that he can come back from this, and let's just hope he's going to be okay no matter what happens afterwards. So, moving on.
It was an incredible match, though, regardless.
It was an incredible match.
So
to set this up, now keep in mind that the last time New Japan ran in the U.S., Jay White had to do a U.S. heavyweight title defense in between two hotly contested matches. The first time he was in between Okada and Ishii versus Suzuki and Sabre.
Oh yeah.
And the Golden Lovers versus the Young Bucks. So Jay White finds himself in this predicament again with an IWGP U.S. heavyweight title match between himself and Juice Robinson. And I have to say that Jay White and Juice Robinson rose to the occasion on this by delivering an honest to God Memphis brawl.
Oh my goodness! Holy!
In this match, was absolutely fucking brutal to start with, and I was here for it.
Those guardrail bumps were just like I was getting like concerned. I'm like, oh man, like this is like this. They're going really. This is going a little crazy right now, and I love it. But like, I'm like, holy cow! Like they're just throwing people around like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Right now.
And it was working. My God, I mean, this is like old school Memphis Southern wrestling.
They were just brawling, man, just throwing each other into shit, just like going wherever and just like beating the crap out of each other.
I mean,
it just got heat.
Which we didn't. Let's face it. Nobody saw that. I don't think anybody saw this coming, especially when Juice came out looking like a patriotic pirate. And Jay White has like new Shinsuke Nakamura inspired gear. that he's wearing. And then we got I don't know.
I mean, this is the Jay White that everybody was kind of looking for a while and was like, you know, where are you, dude? Like, you gotta, like, release the beast a little bit, man. And if you're gonna do this character, you gotta really, like, mean it. And
yeah,
he
this
night.
Like, the only other time I've seen this Jay White was when he had that street fight against Punisher Martinez on that Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Right.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that fits the Switchblade character. What we were getting before, I mean, just... And a lot of people were saying, well, I always knew Jay White was good. Yeah, so did we. We said that the gimmick
was
hampering
clearly
him.
Not clicking. It was clearly not clicking with him. It was not what he was doing wasn't working. Like, it doesn't mean, like, I didn't know Jay White was, like, good. It's like, the guy was just not... He wasn't channeling the right energy into his matches. He wasn't like working like he was this badass like you know, kind of I don't know what you call it, just like no regards for people's, you know, like, you know, health, you know.
The style he was wrestling and the character he was doing, they were just not clicking together. This time it clicked, and I hope that they stick with this.
Right, just throw people around like a rag, you know, ragdoll, yeah. And just like, you know, take some cheap shots and, you know, take some, you know, yeah, that's what you're like the knife pervert for whatever, you know, or whatever people like to call him now. So it's like, why does Vol just, you know, work with that and be that, just become that, you know, don't just be like Jay White with, you know, some weirdo gimmick, you know, but be that guy, like just be that. No nonsense. Just like, I don't care what I have to do, you know.
And let's not forget that Juice Robinson was in this match too, and I think he did rather well.
Oh no no wait wait no 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 rather well is like an understatement. No, Juice had an unbelievable babyface performance in this matchup. And,
he really did. He really did. I mean, there was, you know, it was amazing how there were actually like a lot of straight face versus heel matches on this show.
And I loved the whole like thing with his cast. He couldn't use his cast. That was like another big like great like wrinkle in this match, I think, too. And it also put him at even more of a disadvantage.
Right. Then he cheated. He cheated.
But then they worked it in really well, though, because you know, Jay White was taking all these, you know, shortcuts himself. And then, you know, he ended up, you know, when he was able to, he finally said, screw it. I'm taking it, too, because if he's going to keep taking these little
he didn't win off of it, though, either. So, I mean,
there's
that, too.
Right. But then, man. So the big angle here.
Oh
though,
my
the,
god!
Oh my goodness!
Okay, so they went back out on the outside, and Jay is throwing Juice around. Well, one of these times that he got thrown around, he got snap suplex right into the guardrail where Jim Ross and Josh Barnett are sitting. The force with which it hit the guardrail, which then, you know, laws of physics. Transferred to the table, which pushed Jim Ross over. Josh Barnett on the air says, well, you just done fucked up now. Gets up and goes after Jay White. I don't know if this was an angle or not, if this was worked. If this was not an angle, holy fucking shit.
Barnett insisted on Twitter today that it was not an angle.
I mean, the way he was ranting, when you hear him say, you see that motherfucker run?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, whoa. Like,
oh,
uh-oh.
My God.
I was like, oh, man, Jay, you better run, like, right now, buddy. Like, I would not want Josh Barnett running after me.
On the same show, we have King Haku and Josh Barnett. About
oh
ready
my
to
God.
Throw down. My God. I don't know what I expected going into this match. A Memphis-style brawl with a near shoot was not one of them.
And you know what? All the people who are saying, "Oh, so unprofessional of him to do that."
Including Steve, Steve Cash, our co-host.
Yeah, sorry, Steve, but come on, shut up, dude. Now this was awesome, and you know it. Like this just added more juice into this match, I thought, and it was no pun intended. I thought it fired me up even more, and I'm like, oh, here we go, like this is some good ass shit, like give me more of this, like I was hyped for this.
I think this is about the point where I think the show over delivered. Like, oh my
god. Yeah, I was like, and yeah,
we were afraid, like, this was gonna be the match that killed the crowd, like, holy crap, a roll, oh my god.
Yeah, I completely, like, admit I was, like, wrong, so wrong on how this match is going to go, so
how could we have thought otherwise after Hiromu and Dragon Lee, in which Hiromu, it turns out, nearly legitimately died, you know, how could we think anything but, and then they delivered this, and it was... Yeah, I have nothing but good things to say about this match.
Juice's win came off so huge too. Like that was the only
title change on this match on the show.
Yeah, it was the perfect time for it. It was the perfect like moment for him. And now you know Jay White can, you know, work in the G1 and like kind of like work off of that loss and kind of be even more angry and like more so. And it's gonna be, I think it's gonna work very well for him.
And I mean, let's face it, I mean, it was a heated feud during Kazuna Road too.
Right.
I mean, leading up to it, I mean, with the breaking the bone in his hand thing and
all this.
But I just did not expect this payoff.
Right,
and then we get a bonus shoot from Josh Barnett getting ready to shoot on Jay White. I mean, he was legitimately running away. He was like, "Oh fuck!" oh my god! I'm sure there's going to be some meetings being taken. I'm sure Mark Cuban and Access and Harold May are going to be having a few meetings about this.
Yeah, it was a little awkward. And
because don't forget, I mean, this was an Access employee going after a New Japan employee.
Right, essentially, in that respect, that's what this ended up being. You know, in the framework, it was like, yeah, if you boil it down, that is what it was.
I mean, this was not a New Japan employee, you know, like, this isn't like, you know, when Suzuki just all of a sudden smacked Liger during that one match, you know, when Liger was on commentary, which I'm still bitter that nothing ever came of that. But yeah, this was Josh Barnett going after, this was an Access employee, an employee of Mark Cuban's, going after a Bushiroad employee at a Bushiroad event. And regardless of what you think, you can, I mean, I know Steve, I know you're listening, and I know you didn't like this, even though I thought this was, no matter what, you have to admit that this made the that incident helped cement this match as being legendary.
Right, like, that's what a lot of people are going to remember that from this. I mean, that is...
I mean, that was the moment of the entire show.
I mean, that was so crazy. I mean, it just... I thought it just put so much more juice, and it was... It felt real, man. It was just like a... It was just a real moment, and, like, I don't know. I thought it was just awesome. I thought it was great. Like, I know that maybe it wasn't, like... You know, maybe like the best impulse like reaction on Barnett's part. But,
oh,
like,
no. This was no. I mean, let's not. I mean, yeah, Barnett was in the wrong here, but I'm not gonna.
But I mean, I get, just... at the same time, I get why he did it. I mean, he was very concerned about Jim Ross, who's obviously been through a lot health issue
wise. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Jim Ross was kind of having a little bit of a mare beforehand, you know, as is expected. Yeah. But I mean, JR was legit shaken up by this.
Oh yeah, he was like, he didn't know how to like respond to that. I mean, he was like,
it was just, that was, that's hard to, you know, when you're not expecting to get hit like that, it's like, you're not, that's not really fun to take that when.
Yeah, I can't see that. I mean, I mean, this is pro wrestling. There's always the chance that, yes, this was pre-planned, but I the way that it happened, I just don't think so. I mean, especially how Barnett was swearing on the air like that, too.
Right, yeah, like, he just kind of lost his cool. And,
yeah.
It was...
and by the way, I'm just going to point out that I mentioned on the blog that I don't know if watching the Japanese, if the, you know, watching on NJPW World, you may lose some of this context, but the English version that's on NJPW World is the Access feed. So this has been immortalized, and they did not bleep anything out or anything like that.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
You're to get this. This is the rare time I will say watch the English version, because if you don't, you will. If you stick to the Japanese version, you might lose some of the context here.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. No. No question. It was just one of those things you have to like. You have to like see it. It was just, if you haven't, it was like, it was just amazing. That was such a cool like. It just felt like, yeah, I don't know, man. It just felt real. It felt very real. It was,
I mean,
awesome. It was.
Hiromu versus Dragon Lee was the best wrestled match of the night. This was this shares match of the night just because of the sheer brutality to start with, and then, you know, we're getting like a style of match you rarely ever see in New Japan.
Right.
It
was like
New Japan. But then
it was like
this
Jay
incident,
and Juice were, it was like Jay and Juice were watching in the back and were like, yeah, you know what, we are gonna follow this.
I honestly hope they did.
I think they were watching in the back, sitting there, you know, like, you know what, we're gonna throw each other into guardrails very hard, and we're gonna do some very, you know, mean things to each other.
Yeah, kudos to them too, because I mean, yeah, this was. Yeah, Hiromu Dragon Lee was a better match. This was a spectacle, and sometimes that's something that's missing from New Japan. Sometimes.
Yes.
Is something that's
missing
from New Japan.
100% agree.
It's a spectacle. So then, it turns out the crowd killing match turned out to be the main event.
Yeah,
Okay, now I say this because I know there were some people who really did and who legitimately enjoyed this match too, which is fine because pro wrestling's a broad church and everybody's going to have different likes and tastes and what they're going for. I found the main event to be lackluster. Kenny Omega retaining the IWGP Heavyweight title and presumably control of the Bullet Club, whatever that actually fucking means after what we're going to discuss, over Cody Rhodes. I'm just going to start with this in saying that I'm actually, for once, going to side with JR and Josh Barnett and say I have absolutely no fucking clue what Bernard the Business Bear is supposed to be either.
Yeah, so I guess Chris kind of described this to me on Twitter last night. I guess it was like a gag from like the Being the Elite show, and that.
Oh, of course,
that,
of course.
That
it
just, it's just one of those things they just like worked into it, and it's just like really annoying, I guess. And,
but what is it? I mean, what's the joke? What's the gag?
I don't know. I'm not even 100% sure. It was like that's all I know is from the show.
Yeah,
and
I don't watch Being the Elite because I don't care about Being the Elite.
I don't care enough either. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Like,
I mean,
no,
I've got like 4 Sendai Girls shows stacked up that I haven't watched. And God, and Sumo is starting today.
Yeah, I'm not trying to watch the Bullet Club Variety Hour.
Yeah,
like,
and the World Cup's going on. I mean, I only got so many hours in the day. What's the fucking joke here?
Yeah,
you know?
It's just like I'll never understand it. I'll just never quite get why they do that, and I'm just like, whatever. It's in that Bullet Club bubble of people, I guess. They're like, oh, you wouldn't understand it if you didn't watch Being the Elite, and it's like, okay,
well, that cool, thanks. See ya.
It's like, okay, well,
yeah. Once again, we had a 4.5 hour damn show, and
I thought you meant the match. Because it felt like 4.5 hours.
Yeah, it kind of did, honestly.
Oh,
my God.
I am so over the Kenny Omega, like, 40-minute, like, special. Like, I'm over it.
And,
so over it.
Well, okay. And furthermore, this is the fourth New Japan show on U.S. soil. Two of them have been main evented by IWGP heavyweight title matches featuring Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes, baby.
Hey, I mean, Cody, you know, he has done pretty damn well for himself.
All the credit. Yeah. And character-wise, okay, fine, great. I admit the character.
Just don't
want to
see a 40-minute Cody Rhodes match.
Yeah, who wants to see a 40-minute Cody Rhodes match? I mean,
right.
My God.
And Kenny Omega too, both of them. I just don't want to see a 40-minute match between those two. It just
got to be like this, like over dramatic, like I think they wanted like people to like really like feel something for this, and I'm just left at that point where I'm like, just end this, please. Like, I don't care. Like,
I was at the same point, especially after what we just saw.
The bullet club is being torn apart, and I'm here just like, okay, that's great. Like, can we just get it over with already?
Right, but I mean, how about, you know, we keep talking about the emotion behind the match. We just got genuine fucking emotion in the previous match. Like, actual genuine emotion.
Yeah, like, this is just, like, fabricated, like, forced, like, oh yeah, like you are supposed to feel something because of the Bullet Club is like splintering. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, who fucking cares? I'm sorry, like, but do people actually care about this? Like, I mean, like, is it like this big thing? Like, oh my god, did you hear that Cody Rhodes is splitting the Bullet Club apart? Like, who gives a shit? Good.
Yeah, the Bullet Club, in which they've already betrayed their two previous leaders.
It's nothing new here. Yeah, old shit.
Yeah, it's the fuck. Yeah, I mean, it's the NWO 20 odd years later. I mean,
and by the way, I called it when years ago. I said, oh yeah, Bullet Club's gonna be just like NWO, and they're gonna turn into like the Wolfpack in Hollywood.
Oh yeah,
and sure enough, at the end of this match,
we've been beating this drum for ages. I mean, let's just take it one step further. They're splintering. Oh, it's because, you know, there's one side in New Japan, there's one side in Ring of Honor. The Ingobernables are literally were founded in CMLL and moved to New Japan, and somehow there's no conflict.
Right.
You know?
Oh,
like the,
man.
Like somehow Rush and Naito are still getting along somehow, you know?
Right, and it's like, this whole thing is just so corny, and it's just so, it's just more rehashed late 90s shit that the Bullet Club just continues to do.
Oh, yeah, and... I mean, they've been, you know, the Young Bucks were a DX cosplay for so long, you know,
right.
It's,
right.
But, okay, the match itself was lackluster. I know I'm going to have people disagree with me on this.
Cody taking that powerbomb bump on the table was gnarly, though.
And so was the superplex off the ladder.
Oof, man, that powerbomb bump.
Those were pretty gnarly, but yeah, especially in light of what happened to Hiromu.
Yeah.
But,
oof. Ah. Right.
But then the post match. Okay, so Kenny Omega.
Okay, can we talk about that poor guy in like the blue suit though that got like. His like knee like jammed between the fence when
oh my
when,
god
during that
yeah
match.
Holy
like
shit.
Oh my, everybody was just getting like they made a good point, like those guardrails probably should have been secured like a lot better.
Yeah, they probably I think there's a good case for that, especially after, you know, the previous match.
Holy cow, those things were just, like, they weren't just, like, moving a little bit. I mean, they were just, like, every time somebody hit them, they were, like, flying.
Yeah, I mean, if you were in the front row, you were actually, it turns out, at this show, you were at risk for injury.
Yeah, that poor guy, man, that was holding, like, the title and the belt, near the bell and everything, he just got, like, his, like, knee got completely, like, sandwiched between the table and the fence, the guardrail. It was like, oh... So yeah, it was just a little unsafe conditions.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, but let's get to the promo in which Kenny Omega,
where nothing was really like solved at all, and
nothing was solved. Okay, but check this out: when he makes he cuts a promo that everyone deserves second chances, including Cody Rhodes, and I can't help but thinking.
I was thinking the
including myself for booking a fucking sex offender last week.
That's exactly what I'm like, dude, is he really using this right now to
is he talking about the sex offender?
Mm-mm.
Holy shit.
Yikes. I was like, yo,
let's not forget, in the weeks before, Kenny Omega was race baiting.
I was like, what are you doing? Like, what is he going on about here? Like,
I lost some friends. I lost some Twitter followers and friends over my criticism of that. And, you know, I'm still going to stick by it. I still think he was race baiting when he said that. Because Kenny Omega has never really been able to cut a promo. That wasn't, you know, that's fine. Serious Kenny Omega has never worked for me.
No.
Kenny Omega as anime supervillain is great, you know?
Right.
But, so now Kenny, you're talking about changing the world. You can't even change the show that you book.
Oh, man.
I mean, how the hell, you know, I just can't anymore, you know?
It's very empty. It's a very empty, like, thought on his part when he says that stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It was just like, ugh, very awkward.
And I know we're going to get ourselves in trouble with Kenny Omega fans by going on about this.
Oh, I don't really care.
But, I mean, you're going to cut a promo about second chances the week after you got... You got your tits in the ringer for booking a sex offender. Okay, bruh. Sure thing. And then also, you know, as a punchline to this, talking about how he thinks, you know, it looks like a full house, and there were very clearly empty seats in the Cow Palace.
Yeah, that was so funny when they panned over, and they're like, oh, clearly there's a full house here, and then it's like, they panned over, and there's like all these empty seats, and it's like, oh, yeah. Are you sure about that?
Yeah. But then...
Oh, yeah. But, Haku, baby.
Something that a lot of people have been waiting to happen. And the brothers Tonga and their daddy, King Haku, kicked the entire shit out of the rest of the Bullet Club.
That was wonderful. As much at the same time, I'm laughing that it's basically the Wolf Pack. it was pretty awesome that it was fronted by Haku. Haku like murdering Kenny Omega at the end of New Japan show is like my like fan fiction, basically. So I was like, yeah, this is okay. Like I can work with this.
Yeah. So honestly, this post match angle. More than made up for the lackluster main event. Although, I am going to agree with some of the comments I've seen in which, you know, and now they have a new t-shirt for, you know, the firing squad. Yeah, given the mood of the country right now, and now, and now we have, you know, two gun-themed versions of a unit... seemingly divided on racial lines, as we've noted before, that, you know, the hip elite versions of the Bullet Club all seem to be, you know, white folk, and now Kota Ibushi, who, by the way, neither he nor Taiji Ishimori were anywhere to be seen.
Yep. No, yeah, I still hold the belief that Ibushi got lost on his way to the venue again. He probably got distracted by a leftover fireworks tent.
I think he went back to Japan after CEO, actually.
That's not as fun to say that.
Oh, I know. But if I remember correctly, I think Ibushi went back to Japan. But, yeah, and lest we forget, you know, Ishimori, it was Tama Tonga who introduced Ishimori.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's on this side, you know?
Oh, yeah, good, solid point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. So
can we once again make note that Tama Tonga has had more success recruit, and Balak Fale has had more success with recruits. Than
oh yeah, so Fale, I think Fale is probably on their side too.
Oh, he's got to be. And remember, Fale recruited Gino Gambino.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So I mean, let's face it, Fale and Tonga have now had more success in recruiting into the Bullet Club than Kenny Omega has as leader. But hey, it's okay because Omega and Cody Rhodes reconciled after, you know, this blood feud.
So that was all basically pointless.
Is this how the Kenny Omega IWGP title reign is going to go? Because we're now 1 month into it, and we've had racism, booking a sex offender, and an angle that, you know, kind of went nowhere in the end.
Yeah, like, you know? Essentially, it pretty much just was, like, rendered pointless with that. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It just reminds me so much of NWO stuff.
Yeah, meanwhile, they've toned down, you know, let's be frank here. They've toned down the gay elements to Kota and Kenny and to the Golden Lovers now. You know, they've... Oh boy, we wondered for so long who would finally dethrone Okada, and now this is what the first month of this reign has been.
Yeah, I feel like it's gonna be like an all time bad like IWGP reign for him. Like this is just, I don't know, it's just already shaping up to look like just really.
And again, I like Kenny Omega. I mean, I think as a pro wrestler, he's a great performer. I think Tyson Smith made some heinous mistakes recently in what he's done and said in media and on Twitter and, you know, in his booking prowess. But I really just hope this is not how this reign is going to go, because this is going to be a long fucking reign, even if it's only, like, two defenses. Because, remember, keep in mind, typically first reigns don't last that long.
Yeah, we're going to see.
In New Japan history, I think... Okada was kind of an exception, but even then, it, you know, quote unquote, only lasted like a couple of months,
right?
Know, with only like what, two or three defenses before he dropped it back to Tanahashi, I think.
Yeah.
Without looking. But yeah, I mean this. Oh brother, this is going to be a long. If this is how this is going to go, this is going to be a long reign.
Yeah.
And not in the Okada sense. I mean, it's just going to...
Feel like a drag.
Like everything else in modern life, when it comes to, you know, Donald Trump, etc., setting the pace for society, it's like every goddamn day there's something. Mm. And I'm really hoping this is not going to be the case.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to get an every goddamn day situation... from Kenny Omega, I may be walking away for a little while because I don't know if I can take it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't like him. He's very unlikable to me. I've never been a big Kenny Omega guy, even since he was like the cleaner, and even before that, Kenny was never my guy, and I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. I'm just not excited for this reign because I just don't feel like he is a top guy. I know that's an incredibly unpopular opinion, but I just don't see him as that. I don't feel he is that. I feel like he doesn't have what it takes to do that. I mean, that's obviously my opinion. I don't speak for everybody here, but I'm not looking forward to this at all myself either. I mean, I was happy for him when he won it, but like I'm hoping it doesn't like last a long time, as I just don't want to see that. I really don't. I'm not looking forward to it at all. Kind of hoping he drops it at what would it be? What, Destruction, you said, right?
King of Pro Wrestling is usually the
Wrestling
is usually the...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping he drops it there, too. I mean, who would it be? Probably
Naito, possibly? Maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like, because I'm not sure who's gonna win a G1. I mean, I don't know if they're what route they're gonna go, if they're gonna just have Okada win it again, but.
Well, let's save that for part B, so
Oh.
as far as G1, but
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, the month of June and now going into July has, in my opinion, not really been a stellar one for Kenny Omega, either in ring or outside of it, and more to the point, outside of it. But time will tell. I really just, yeah. And can we please not have Cody Rhodes in another IWGP title match for a long, long time? Because
I'd be fine with that.
I mean, yeah, he works the crowd great. He's a great heel. The matches, his match. I mean, his match against Okada dragged, and we were there live. All therefore, it was a decent match. But I mean, Okada did his own finisher better. You remember? Yeah, I mean, oh brother. But that was the show that was. Oh, and one last, yeah, and again, let's, again, I'm really hoping this doesn't become a race war within the Bullet Club, because let's face it, as of right now, the whole Bullet Club insignia and look and logo look like they could be a neo-Nazi group. And I at this point, with the way things are going, I'm waiting for a shooting to happen with someone wearing a Bullet Club shirt at this point. So let's just, I'm really hoping they put the brakes on, pump the brakes on some of this. But we'll see. But Lawrence, do you have anything else to add about? I mean, overall, G1 Special in San Francisco is well worth the rewatch. There's a match that may be now difficult to watch, given what we know. The U.S. title match is a must-watch for the insanity behind it, and the post main angle made it worth it, I think. Lawrence.
I'm hoping that Haku is like sticking around. I'm like all for this Haku just like being like the ringleader of this and just like being just fucking guys up even in his old age. Like I'm kind of hoping he sticks around like full time. I'd be very thrilled about that.
Yeah, that would be that would be something else. That would definitely be something else. So, all right, I think that's gonna wrap up part A of this. Lawrence and I are gonna take a break here, and we're gonna return with part B, which is our traditional G1 Climax preview show. So, stay tuned. Thanks for listening to part A, and we'll see you back here in a few minutes. So, talk to you then. Take care. Goodbye.